When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
Welcome back to EV News Daily, and welcome to a special bonus edition of the podcast looking at the future of Ford in Europe as it electrifies. There was a time when it seemed every second driveway in Britain or Germany had a Ford parked in it. School runs in Fiestas, morning commutes in Focuses, and the Blue Oval found pride of place in government fleets and police pools. I remember the UK tabloid newspapers when I was growing up in the maybe 80s, no, 90s. I was maybe a teenager in the 90s. They would talk about Mondeo Man, literally as a shorthand for the average guy in Great Britain, because everyone owned a Mondeo. Ford's grip on Europe's roads was so firm that 12 years straight in a row, the Fiesta reigned supreme as the number one car sold in Europe, and it didn't lose the crown. A symbol of trust and accessibility on a continental scale. Well, today, Ford's European operations are somewhat different, facing a critical juncture where EVs represent not only the greatest challenge, but the most viable path to salvation, in my opinion. I'm a huge Ford fan, by the way, because Ford sold cars for the everyman and everywoman. But I grew up in an era of Fords being on my bedroom wall. Fast Fords, RS Fords, crazy cozzies, and all the rest. Just the idea of Fords rallying or really rapid Fords gave you a sense you could have something exotic and you wouldn't have to have a crazy job when you grew up. I mean, don't get me wrong, I had supercars on my bedroom wall as well, and, you know, Lamborghini Countaches. But a fast Ford was attainable back in those days. These days, it's so different. The American automaker finds itself struggling with a rapidly declining market share over here. They're closing factories. The former management team made missteps that have left it vulnerable to the Chinese and disconnected it from EV buyers. Hey, a reminder, our bonus shows are exclusively for our Patreon supporters. For the first 7 days, only Patreon insiders get the early access. They get their name on the list of legends in the show notes if you want to be an exec producer or above. You get the power to shape future shows as well. And if being in the know and on the supporter list sounds like you, check out the link, patreon.com/EVNewsDaily, and be part of something special. Let's get into it. I'm looking forward to this podcast today. I've been writing this on and off for a long time now, making little notes in my book and in my Word spreadsheet that I kind of have open and stuff. Ford's European success story began in the late 1960s with the creation of Ford of Europe, and it really hit its zenith in the 1990s and into the 2000s. The company's European strategy was built on three pillars that made Ford truly formidable: mass market accessibility, a very strong product portfolio, and manufacturing efficiency. During its peak years, Ford commanded impressive market shares across Europe, as high as 12% in 1997. The Ford Fiesta, launched in 1976, was the definition of Ford's European success. It evolved into the UK's bestseller for 12 years in a row. With over 22 million units produced globally, 16.5 million came here. The Fiesta represented Ford's ability to create vehicles that resonated with the European consumer. They wanted efficiency, affordability, practicality. The Blue Oval just defined all of those. Similarly, the Ford Focus was introduced in 1998. For me, it was a whole new world. I passed my test in, 1996? Yeah, I think I passed in 95, 96. So the Escort was a car that I'd kind of always looked at. Maybe one of my first car was, you know, was going to be something smaller, but maybe I'd get an Escort one day. And then the Focus arrived, European Car of the Year winner. It demonstrated Ford's capacity for innovation and quality. It was exciting, even though it was a very average family car. It was the cornerstone of their European lineup. Ford's European operations during the golden era were characterized by big manufacturing footprints in Germany, Spain, the UK. The company's Cologne and Saarlouis factories in Germany became centres of excellence. Millions of vehicles made. At its peak in 2001, Ford achieved European sales of 1.28 million vehicles. It was the second largest automotive brand over here. Like I say, everyone had one. The company's commercial vehicle division, particularly the Transit, established Ford as Europe's leading commercial vehicle manufacturer, a position it does maintain today with a 14% market share. This success in the commercial vehicles market provided Ford with stable revenue and strong dealer relationships that, in a way, helped their passenger car sales. Now, look, obviously, you know, you might not know the UK car market. Obviously, in America and down under, you have either truck culture, pickup culture, or ute culture. We don't have that here. We have, it was again called, the shorthand of the tabloid newspapers, white van man. But it's true, if you are a tradie over here, you don't have a truck or a pickup, you have a white van. And it was nearly always a Transit. I remember one of my first jobs, when I say, well, I wasn't paid for it, by the way, but, you know, when I was 14 or 15, like my job when I was volunteering at radio stations where I'd go on for a 30-year whatever career in commercial radio, when I was starting out volunteering, I would literally get in the back of a Ford Transit and drive around the area and help the traveling travel reporter do their bulletins. Like, and that was it. My very first experience of work was spending my day in a Ford Transit. I love Ford. So, where's it gone wrong? When did it start to go wrong? The decline began in the mid-2010s and accelerated really dramatically, with market share falling from 8% in 2016, 5% in 2022. And the decline was really a mix of things: strategic blunders, market timing failures, misunderstanding of the European consumers. How did it go so wrong for Ford? The most critical error was the product refresh cycle for Ford compared to its competitors. European rivals like Volkswagen maintained about a 4.2-year model refresh cycle. But Ford, in that era, allowed its models to get really stale. The company's division delayed the new Mondeo, the new S-Max, the new Galaxy because of factory transitions and things like that. But when the new model of the Mondeo arrived in 2015, it was old news. It was out in the US for years as the Fusion, and in China since 2013, a couple of years before. Ford's factory closure decisions were damaging. The closure of the plant in Belgium and delays in moving Spanish production made big gaps in Ford's European lineup. These manufacturing disruptions coincided with competition from premium German brands and emerging brands as well. Let's tie it all up to electric vehicles then. So where are we today? Well, Ford has gone really premium. Ford's approach to going electric here in Europe, and again, apologies if you're not in the European market, let me educate you. It's not about built tough, it's not about pickups, and it's certainly about the Ford F-150 over here. It's about two models, really, and that is the Explorer, which is not the Explorer that you might have in mind, but we call it the Explorer, and the Capri, which is certainly not the Capri that you might have in mind. They use the name again. They were a bit naughty because they really leaned into that nostalgia, because the Capri is really special. It's an iconic car. It had iconic moments in British television in the 1970s and 80s. And then when we saw it, we're like, that's not a Capri. You're just using the name. And that, unfortunately, resulted in quite a lot of pushback. I remember particularly the electrifying.com channel. Love that. Brilliant website, great YouTube channel. They were brutal about using the Capri name and not delivering a Capri. So they discontinued the popular cars they sold here. The Fiesta had nowhere to go. They killed the Fiesta in 2023. The Focus had nowhere to go, and it's gone this year. The Mondeo was gone in 2021. All massive vehicles with loads of love and amazing nameplates. And there was no electric alternative lined up. The product pipeline was empty. Ford launched the Explorer, which I've had a look today. So this data is absolutely bang on accurate as of a couple of minutes ago. The Ford Explorer starts at $39,285. So it's a smidge under the £40,000 luxury car tax here. but it doesn't get the grant because it's too expensive. And it's got a teeny weeny 52 kilowatt hour battery as well. So it's a 40 grand vehicle with a small battery. If you want the old 77 kilowatt hour battery that VW have moved on from, that's 45,885. It's a £46,000 vehicle. And that's, look, that's for the base trims. Then there's the Capri, which they've priced so premium. Again, tiny battery, 52 kilowatt hours, is 41,485. So £41,500 to get into it. To get the big battery in all-wheel drive, premium driver assist trim, is £57,485. You're asking me for £57,500 for a Ford. And not a particularly spare. Look, the Capri is nice, don't get me wrong. But it's nice in a way that the VW ID4 and ID5, which these cars are based on, are just kind of nice. Like, I'd love them in my driveway. But I'm not spending £57,500 on a Ford Capri. They have abandoned the mass market segment where they made all of their money with those vehicles. The Explorer and Capri pricing strategy was a fundamental mess-up of the European market. Ford positioned these vehicles as premium. They were built on Volkswagen's MEB platform, though. They didn't sound like knockoff vehicles, but if you were following the EV industry, a lot of EV early adopters, I know because a lot of people listen to this podcast to learn about EVs, know a little bit more than your average buyer. They do their own research, and they made direct comparisons with these European brands like Volkswagen, of which the vehicles they were made on, Volkswagen ID5, Skoda Enyaq Coupe. You'd have those over the Ford Capri, wouldn't you? The Ford Mustang Mach-E, let's not forget it, was technically incredibly accomplished. What a vehicle. 487 PS of power, 0 to 62 miles an hour, 3.7 seconds at its peak, but it hasn't hit any volume sales in Europe. It's got premium positioning, it's limited mass market appeal, incredible performance specifications, and long range, 372 miles, I think, WLTP'd, Magna Ride suspension, brilliant vehicle, hasn't cut through. So what about the pros and cons of using the MEB platform? You might think that I'm saying it was a mistake to do it. Look, by leveraging VW's EV architecture, Ford cut development time by at least 2 years, at least allowing its EV models to hit European showrooms much sooner. Ford avoided billions of dollars in costs and delays otherwise required to engineer and validate an entirely new EV architecture for European tastes. This reduced technical and financial risk at a critical stage of the business. VW's MEB platform was homologated for EU safety, for charging, for regulatory standards, everything else. Ford sidestepped that. And that can stall a new entry on a platform in a region for a long time too. Plus, Ford capitalized on VW's supply chain, charging network partnerships, access to battery supply contracts, parts suppliers, all really important. However, despite the vehicles looking like Fords, and when I get passed by an Explorer or a Capri today, they're good-looking vehicles. I like them. The vehicles drove like VWs and Skodas. It's harder for Ford to command a price of almost £60,000 for a Capri at the top end, when it's not that premium, is it? Let's face it. And you can't really say we're different. I mean, that inside and outsides are different, but some of the controls and infotainment are the same. Complaints about VW haptic controls and the UI. VW's platform isn't exclusive, so Ford competes head-to-head with those VW, Skodas, Cupras on identical hardware with, you know, not as great brand heritage at the minute, and higher price points. Royalty and licensing fees cut the profitability, erode the margins at Ford, limiting the financial upside compared to doing it themselves, which they are doing, by the way, long-term plan for EVs, I should point out. And Ford's ability to respond to new trends, so new battery chemistries, software features, entirely constrained by what VW was doing on the MEB platform. And again, we had an ID3 in the driveway for a time. I like that vehicle. I like what VW have done with the MEB platform, but look, it's not premium at all. And there's a lot wrong that has had to be and is being fixed. And it will be fixed with this kind of big refresh coming next year, a complete reworking of the ID3, ID4. It might even be called the Tiguan, the ID4. Entirely new vehicle, really. And so Ford have been at their mercy when you got to say VW didn't particularly smash it out of the park. Solid, not bad, but solid. So, we haven't even talked about China yet, or the competitive set. And what else can you get for that money as a Ford Puma? Commercially, these are a big deal. Supply chains, and also maybe what could Ford do? Well, I've got a couple of ideas that they won't care about, but you know, I'll let you know, and you can see if I'm wide of the mark or not. And if anybody at Ford listens to this podcast, I highly doubt it. Feel free to tell me you're an idiot because you don't understand our business. But I've got some ideas, and I'll present them in a minute. We'll take a break, slurp a coffee, and back in a mo. So we have to talk about China on the podcast, don't we? Because the emergence of Chinese EVs fundamentally altered the EV market. BYD for one, MG for another. Big market share already through very aggressive pricing, rapid model development cycles, MG leaning into, particularly here, I mean, across Europe, of course, as well. But I think a lot of people really do think MG's a British brand still. Maybe some older generations have more love for that and don't really care that it's owned by the Chinese, but they see the MG badge. And so all that heritage, but at very low prices. Chinese manufacturers are refreshing some models every 1.3 years on average. There are some models that aren't a year old and they're getting a refresh or an update or new chips or a new look. It's crazy. European competitors, what, 4.2, 4.5 year cycles, providing continuous tech advancement and cutting costs in China. Chinese EV pricing advantages are substantial. Of course, labor costs are a lot lower, but they haven't got magical ways of making vehicles over there. They still make vehicles the same way, but just all of their costs are lower. You know, and for good and bad reasons, obviously. But labour is the big one. And vehicles costing 25% less at least by the time you've made it in China and shipped it over here and paid tariffs and still make money at lower prices. And we'll talk about China a bit more in a minute, actually. But I wanted to look at the competitive set for the Ford Puma, because the Ford Puma is the new one, the new vehicle from Ford. I can't possibly look at every market, so I have to focus on the UK where I am. And I'm sorry about apologies if I'm not doing this in your local currency. Ford Puma, built on a modified B2E platform derived from the conventional Puma, which is Ford's best-selling vehicle over here now that there's nothing else to sell, really. The Gen E offers 233 miles of range at its maximum and maintains the Gigabox, as they call it, the big storage solution that made the Puma quite well known. So the new Ford Puma starts at £29,995, so that's £30,000, £30,000 in its absolute stripped-down select standard trim, they call their base trim, 123 kilowatts of power, it's not bad, 43 kilowatt-hour battery, WLTP range is great for the battery size, by the way, 233 miles, it's a really small vehicle. Mind, but Ford has nailed the efficiency. Comfort pack takes it to 30.5. Top spec is 31.5. What about real world pricing, though? Because these big car manufacturers can influence monthly deals and things like that. I can't get into all that because you end up looking at, well, what's the deposit down? And I'd look at leasing. I'd look at PCP. There's no point. Everything's different. But a quick look on CarWow an hour ago showed me that the dealer direct offers on Ford Pumas, a brand new car direct from a Ford main dealer, is $24,350 with the government discount off. They got the maximum government grant, one of the only cars that has. So that's a saving of £5,700 from the RRP. So Ford have taken some money off the RRP, and then you got the full government grant off that as well. So Ford Puma, let's rewire our brains. It's not a 30 grand car, which it has been until the government grant. Now it's a 24,350 car. But you know what? The depressing thing for Ford is that's probably still not enough. A similar sized Vauxhall Frontera is £5,000 cheaper. You can get a Vauxhall Frontera, I'm looking at this right now on CarWow, dealer direct offers, 18,916. Now, a lot less range, 186 miles WLTP, and 186 is a lot less than 233. But and it's got the same size pack, 44 kilowatt hours, so a lot less efficient. However, something a lot smaller. It's a segment smaller. It's the Hyundai Inster is 40 centimetres shorter, 20 centimetres more narrow, 50% less storage, but very, very stylish. And if you want a compact car for safe, reliable transport for maybe two and occasionally four people. You know, the Insta still does over 200 miles of WLTP range, and it's £16,800 for a brand new one now. That's an £8,000 offset. No, the Puma's bigger. Not by much, but it is bigger. But if you need compact, reliable transport, to then go £8,000 more for a Puma, you do need to have, well, I need to maybe fit five adults and a bit more storage space. So what about comparable vehicles? Citroën EC3, not the EC3 smaller one, but the bigger one, the taller SUV shape, the Citroën EC3 Aircross. Directly comparable, 188 miles, so a lot less range. But again, well under 20K, a smidge over 20,000 at 27,45 is the MG4, getting a little long in the tooth. I can't believe I said that. It seems like it's only been here 5 minutes, but they've already refreshed it in China. We're going to get the refresh as well. 51 kilowatt hour battery in that, and it's £20,000, 745. The Renault 5. Okay, so now it's getting discounts. It's been out a little while now, the Renault 5, so it's just starting to get some offers. That now starts at £20,829. 40 kilowatt hour pack, 192 miles of range, so we're 40 shy of the Puma. But look, the Renault 5, bags of style, loads of style. MG's MGS5 is a couple of pounds more, but that's got a 49 kilowatt hour battery, 211 miles of range. And the MGS5 is a big family vehicle, way bigger than a Puma. To fit a family, loads more space, generously appointed as well in terms of trim levels, and it's £21,345. It's 21 and a half. And a lot of this depends on monthly offers as well, I know. What about a curveball? Citroën EC4X. All right, same mileage on WLTP as the Puma, from a slightly bigger battery, 50 kilowatt hours. Loads more room, though. Quite curious styling for a saloon, sedan-y kind of, what is it? But it's £21,500. Peugeot's E2008, that's 26.5, but it comes with a massive battery, 54 kilowatt hour, 250 miles of range. And if you want to go a little more premium, so if you want to spend a bit more than a Puma, you can get into an ID3 in essential pure trim, much bigger battery, way more efficient, 4.4 miles per kilowatt hour. Great monthly deals backed by VW. Škoda's new Elroq. All right, we're getting premium now, but the Elroq is 27.7, 55 kilowatt hour pack, identical mileage to the Puma, but it's £3,000 more and getting way more premium. Renault Megane is a different segment, 285 miles of range, 60 kilowatt hour pack. It's a whole class different to the Puma, and it's £28,000. So yeah, it's £4,000 more. The Kona, in case you're wondering, always a good benchmark for a family car. Again, Kona, bigger, 65 kilowatt hour battery, well over 319 miles odd of range. Legendary efficiency on the Hyundais, but it is £30,066. So you can probably do a deal and get it under 30, maybe 29 something. Good monthly deals from Hyundai in the 200s, you know, on that. Whole different type of vehicle, though. But look, that's not even all. You know, I say to some of my American listeners as well, American listeners, our small car market is just ridiculous at the moment. The last 12 months, last 18 months has been an explosion in that bit of the market. And that's just a sample, by the way. That's not all of the vehicles. There's so much. I could go into way more. That's how competitive it is for Ford. And even with the full UK government grant, and they'd be stuffed without it, by the way, but they've got the full UK grant, a bit of money off for Ford as well, 24 and a half. They're starting to get into the right ballpark now for that entry-level Puma, but that's the level of problem that Ford has got here in terms of making money, but up against ridiculous competition. And I haven't even mentioned BYD Seagulls and things like that, you know, smaller vehicles. So, quick mention, Ford's commercial vehicle electrification plan is a big strength for them in the EV markets. E-Transit Custom starts production this year, next year. Europe's one-ton van segment being targeted there, where they lead 236 miles of range, big towing. E-Transit Custom will address commercial users' concerns about EV practicality. The broader Transit electric family, the two-ton E-Transit and smaller Courier variants They provide Ford with a comprehensive EV lineup in the commercial world. Very, very strong there. Well, the planned Focus SUV for 2027, obviously not its official name, might be called the Focus, might be called something else. It's a great name to have in your locker if you're Ford, but we'll call it the Focus for now. This represents Ford's attempt to recapture mass market segments abandoned with the discontinuation of their traditional passenger cars. It'll be built at Ford's Valencia plant in Spain. That has an annual capacity of 300,000 units. This crossover will offer both petrol hybrid and pure electric powertrains to address the different market needs. Positioned between the Puma Gen E, which, you know, we've established is a mid-20,000 something car now, and the Explorer, which currently costs 40k. I mean, it's literally going to be between those, not only in pricing, but size as well. The Focus aims to compete directly with the VW ID4, Skoda Enyaq, and the emerging Chinese competitors in this mid-size crossover segment, and aren't there loads of those coming from China at the moment? However, this vehicle is still at least 2 years away, and that might be 2 years until the reveal. The model's success will largely determine whether Ford can rebuild volume sales in Europe or remain relegated to being a niche player. The multi-energy powertrain choice for the Focus acknowledges the European market and the realities here, where pure electric adoption varies by region and consumer segment. If they release the Focus as a pure BEV over here in the UK, I think it'd go down very well. Some other countries, France, Germany, Norway, be very good. Spain's already coming along, where the vehicle will be made, by the way, having a great 2025. Other countries might want possibly plug-in hybrid, maybe EREV. This approach allows Fords to compete across the full spectrum of powertrain preferences, whilst also catering to customers that want to go electric. So what platform will they use? Well, I think I can confidently say it won't be VW's MEB platform, or even MEB+. One option, then, Ford has already announced its Universal EV platform. Now, that is scheduled for a 2027 release. It's developed as part of a $5 billion investment, the UEVP, Universal EV Platform, promises to deliver affordable EVs with starting prices from $22,000, directly competitive with the Chinese makers and European value brands. There's a load of choice between 18 and 22 in the UK. So this production system, it's a whole new way of making cars, really. It reduces the parts count by at least 20%, assembly workstations by 40%, and even production time by 15%. And this is all in an industry that has iterated itself down to the final nth degree. These are massive, massive improvements. It's a whole new way of building vehicles. The efficiency enables Ford to compete on price and be profitable, and also be sustainable. Technical specs for UEVP vehicles include cobalt-free and nickel-free lithium-ion phosphate packs integrated structurally into the floor of the vehicle, reducing weight and cost, improving space. The platform's flexibility enables multiple body styles from hatchbacks to pickup trucks and economies of scale across every segment. However, that may well be too much too soon for Ford of Europe. The first vehicles they produce on this revolutionary architecture will surely be for the USA first. And if they're a global vehicle, it probably won't be a European-made Focus. So what else have they got? Well, according to Felix Page at Autocar magazine, he writes, "The new crossover could become one of Ford's best-selling lines globally. It will not replace the Cougar, but rather will be sold alongside it as a separate model line that introduces a multi-energy approach with petrol hybrid and electric drivetrains, as it has done with the Puma. As the two cars will be built in parallel at Ford's Valencia plant, it is also expected to be a close match size-wise to avoid the need for costly alterations to the production line and process, while also sharing key components. The new model, we'll call it the Focus, is highly likely to be based on the C2 platform, the same one that Ford uses for mid-sized C-segment models in Europe, having first been used for the outgoing 4th-gen Focus way back in 2018. This architecture underpins a range of saloons, crossovers and SUVs worldwide, testament to its flexibility, but has so far yet to accommodate a pure electric powertrain. And once again, this is me editorialising here, not Mr. Page at Autocar. Once again, it's that dilemma. Do you go with a pure EV platform to make the best possible EV that you can, or do you use an architecture that by the time this vehicle comes out is not only almost 10 years old, maybe older, which is the problem that's what got Ford in this problem, but also is a compromise. Do the car makers have to compromise to make money, to make affordable vehicles? Should they be going pure EV? The likes of, well, Tesla's always done, but the likes of BMW more recently saying, all right, we tried it both ways and now this is the way to do it. So we'll wait and see. So many questions. So what's Ford got to do? Well, they've got to localize European EV production if they want to be competitive and reduce supply chain vulnerabilities. They have their Cologne EV center as the foundation, but additional capacity is going to be required. Battery supply chain partnerships should prioritize European suppliers to reduce costs and improve supply security and do things like accessing things like the new UK car grant. There's the Turkish partnership with Ford Otosan that can be expanded to provide additional manufacturing capacity to European markets as well. And how do they fight the Chinese? Ford's commercial vehicle heritage is an advantage in practical electric vehicles that the Chinese can't replicate very easily. There are some commercial vehicles from China. They're pretty rubbish. The company should emphasize payload capacity. Ford should talk about towing and payload and durability and their heritage in commercial vehicles. The service network can be an advantage over the Chinese as well, because there's Ford dealers everywhere. Service infrastructure will give customer confidence. They should really play into that and say, you know, these Chinese brands, some of them aren't even around anymore because they've gone bust in China. Want to take the risk on that? No. Hey, we're Ford Blue Oval. Come to us. I think they need to be more aggressive. And you know, I'm here for the Chinese invasion because they're cheap cars and I want people to drive cheap cars that are safe and reliable. They're getting Euro NCAP 5 testing and stuff. They're safe. And so, you know, you can argue about how they're made and the regime and whatnot, but still, I want people to have great value cars to choose from. And so that's the weakness, isn't it? It's the uncertainty. You know, what the heck is this new Chinese name? We're Ford. They, you know, it's not scaremongering. Just telling, say, people, these companies are going bust in China. You want to be left with a car that doesn't work or whatever? Lots of people have been. We're Ford. They lean into that. Regulatory compliance in the European markets. They've been here forever. They know how it works. They should be doing better. And Ford can accelerate their product development cycles to match the Chinese as well. And they've talked about how they're going to do this as well. So what do Ford need to do, in my opinion? It's the sub 20,000 euro, or it's around 20,000 euro models. And I'm not saying launch the Fiesta EV, but launch the Fiesta EV, do you know what I mean? They're bringing back things like the Nissan Micra, based on the Renault 5, and Nissan are smart, because it's, you know, partnership with Renault. And the Micra is a big vehicle now. It's not like the small little Micra that it used to be. Everything's got fat, though, because of safety. But still, you know, a new Fiesta would get bigger. But still, the timing advantage of hitting Europe now with cheaper cars, Ford still has time to establish a market position in cheap EVs. It's not too late for them. Fleet and commercial integration has to be prioritized between now and then. The next couple of years, lean into commercial, lean into the transit. Ford's European recovery through EVs has to mean an abandoning of premium positioning. I see why it was tempting to do it, and I get why they did it. But Ford is the mass market, and they left it, and they deserted it. And no one's paying almost £60,000 for a Ford Capri that's not a Capri. So the UEVP platform and Ford, the Focus SUV are vital in that 20-something thousand euro price band. In vans and small commercial vehicles, they're a leader. I think they're fine there. Second wave collaborations and rapid platform development will enable Ford to catch up on costs, features, and adaptability. It's not too late, like I say. Their extensive dealership network can be scaled for EV adoption. A customer loyalty, I think, can still be there, but they must launch ultra-competitive EVs in core segments. They won't do it before the Chinese, because the Chinese are here now. But VW, the European rivals, if not the ID1, then certainly the ID Polo, and the other vehicles, so Cupra Raval and the Škoda version as well, the Epic, they are coming sooner than Ford will get cheap EVs here. And then time is ticking for them. If Ford delivers on that, they could see a resurgence in popularity and profitability. Maybe not at the glory days, but I think they can do it. Ford set the standard back in the day for family, for fleet vehicles, for small, cheap vehicles. But so many problems over here in Europe. It wasn't just one thing. Delaying models, over-reliance on partnerships, poor pricing choices have led for that to that big dramatic decline in market share and, I hate to say it, relevance as well. With Chinese EVs capturing share through just sheer pricing, but also value as well, because they're loaded with technology, Ford's premium EV approach missed the mark. It didn't work. Draw a line under it. Strategic recommendations from me would be accessible EV lineup from Ford. Get back to what we love about them. Localize production. Be cost competitive. Strengthen their commercial vehicle at the same time, reputation and advantage. And realign with that rapid execution of bringing new things to the market to restore Ford's position and growth over here in Europe. That's my thoughts anyway. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. I've waffled on for far too long today, but hopefully a bit of a history lesson and a bit of a look at where we are today with Ford and maybe where they go in the future. What do you think? I'd love to hear from you. Have you owned Fords in the past? Do you own them now? What do you think of the Explorer and Capri? Have you bought the new Puma? What do you think? Let me know. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you on the next one.